Hello, universe. We live in a world where we are almost always online. The internet and technology have become so deeply ingrained into our daily lives that it is almost impossible to imagine what life would be like without them. I mean, if you think about it, when was the last time you went an entire day without using your phone? What would happen to your mind if you drowned out all of the noise around you? Well, we set out to find out. My name is Julian, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sorhan. Today, we will be sharing the most impactful insights, ideas, and actionable takeaways that we got from doing a silent retreat. You will benefit from learning about what happens to the mind when it is disconnected from the entire world. We'll start off by describing the setup for each of our silent retreats. We'll then explain why we decided to do it and kind of how this experience impacted our state of mind. And then we'll dive deep into some of the most important lessons that we took from the experience. And finally, we'll finish off by sharing some actionable takeaways that can benefit you tremendously once you begin to implement them. Awesome. So to start off, what is this silent retreat? How does this work? So Sorhan and I actually had a bit of a different setup. So for me, I rented out a cabin out in the countryside through Airbnb. It was a cabin that had a lake and some trees, so there was a good amount of nature, but there was no humans, no internet, no technology, just me, myself, and I, along with some journals to write in. And I also fasted for 3 of the days, because why the hell not, right? So yeah, what about you, Sorhan? How was your silent retreat setup?
And my setup was different than yours. I decided to do it at my own apartment, and I did it during Christmas time because it was a time where everybody, including my roommates, were gone. They were with their families, and I thought I would have less distractions. And I decided to lock myself in a bathroom with a notepad and a pen, and I didn't take any books with me. I made sure there are no distractions and no excuse for me to get unfocused, basically. It was definitely a challenge. It was just as challenging as running a half marathon or going hiking for 5 miles or having a really tough workout. And that's one thing I really liked about it. Realizing how challenging it was further encouraged me to continue.
Yeah, man. Well, I got to say, I'm a bit jealous because that setup sounds pretty freaking amazing. But cool. At this point, you guys might be wondering, why did you guys even do this? Like, what the hell? What is the purpose behind all of this? So we'll each explain, kind of go through like what was our intention here and kind of the overall benefits that we saw to doing the silent retreat. Starting off, I had read about experiences of others that had also done a silent retreat. There's a traditional 10-day Vipassana silent retreat, and the way that these people describe how deeply impacted they were by the experience really inspired me to try it out for myself. If I hear about something that really benefits someone, it may not be the same for me, but I want to experiment and try what works for me because we're all uniquely different. And I like to find tools for self-discovery because that's truly the intention behind a lot of what I do. And apart from that, as I mentioned in the beginning, we're constantly living with technology and with so much noise, so many demands, so many requests. My intention was to disconnect with the world so that I could reconnect with myself. I just wanted to see what would happen to the mind with complete silence. And so one of the things I observed very closely is what would happen to the mind during the silent retreat. So one of the first things I noticed is that the mind naturally wants to get distracted. And the mind wants to look for a distraction for various reasons. Sometimes it wants to do it to escape the discomfort of critical thinking, or sometimes it feels very tired, or it wants to remove itself from the present moment for whatever reason, or it's bored, or just simply because of a subconscious impulse. Now, you can't really change the mind's desire to get distracted, but you do have conscious power over how you choose to get distracted, and you can do things that minimize the number of times the mind gets distracted. So when the mind wants to get distracted, what do you usually choose your distraction to be, right? I want you to think about that. Like, what is your distraction of choice? A grand majority of people, including myself, will agree that our phone is the distraction we most often choose. So then that leads to the question, why are our phones the distraction we most often choose? Our phones are the most common distraction for a majority of us for several reasons. First, it requires almost no energy to use your phone. Like if you think about it, you could be dead tired on your bed, like not even wanting to move, but you could still use your phone completely normally, right? Second, it produces a high amount of stimulation. Third, it takes less than 2 seconds to reach for your phone. So it's so easy. And the easier it is to do something, the more likely you are to do that thing. That is a powerful formula for addiction, because every time you choose to get distracted by your phone, you are teaching the mind that whenever it wants to get distracted, it should reach for your phone. Now, I'll talk about a little bit of science here. So in the brain, there is a fatty substance called myelin, which wraps around the nerve fibers and serves to increase the speed of electrical communication between neurons. When you first do something, the myelin between the connection of neurons is very thin and very weak. However, the more you do something and you get better at it, the more that connection strengthens and thickens. And the stronger and thicker the connection between neurons is made, the faster and more reliable the communication between neurons will be. This means that the more you use your phone, the less thought it will require to use it in the future, and the more subconscious the action becomes. This creates a vicious cycle of addiction. And the problem is, there's only a tiny percentage of us that are actually aware of how addicted we are to our phone and how much they distract us. Worst of all, even for those that are aware of their addiction to their phone, most will do almost nothing to try and to control it. So the benefit behind this whole silent retreat is that there's complete silence. You're completely disconnected from all of technology and everything. And this is powerful because you drown out the stimulation of noise. You minimize the number of ways in which you can get distracted. And silence really creates a space through which you can achieve a profound level of depth in your thoughts. It creates a subtle stillness that allows you to listen to your true self. Because the quieter you become, the more you are able to hear.
Yeah, I totally agree with that experience. Minimizing distractions and interruption is as high priority as any of your important projects and goals these days. I also feel like the social conditioning today has made us into a snacking culture. Instead of eating a healthy meal, for example, and letting it digest, most of us just keep eating snacks all day. And we do the same thing with information, right? We're snacking with our attention, whether it's video clips that are getting shorter and shorter, the albums that people used to buy. Now we don't really buy albums, right? We buy one song. So it's like a snacking culture. And we're so addicted to looking at our phones, going online, and just getting those short spurts of dopamine rush in our brain. And I also experienced within the first 5 minutes when I sat down, I kept trying to distract myself from sitting down and actually writing and answering the questions that I had written out.
It's really interesting that you mentioned the concept of snacking with our attention, because the thing to realize is that our attention is literally being monetized right now, right? Like you have all these social media apps that the more they're able to kind of capture and conquer your attention, your time, your engagement, the more money they're able to make. And the more money they make, the more that they can invest into engineering into their products in order to increase the addiction cycles built into the application. So it's an interesting thing to be aware of and to kind of try to combat, because these people are trying to make money. You really have to stand guard at the door of your mind, because if you don't, all the noise in the world can kind of take you to wherever you want, right? So it's crazy. Yeah. So moving on, one of the other things I was going to mention that I noticed from the silent retreat is that I stopped comparing myself to other people. And one of the effects of not having seen anyone in almost 5 days is that I stopped judging other people, because I really had no one else to judge. I couldn't compare myself to anyone because I wasn't interacting with anyone at all. And the effect this had on me was profound, because when I had no one else to compare myself with, the only person I could create any comparison or judgment with was myself. And when all that intention becomes self-centered, you really go deep into the chambers of your being. And I really believe now that the only person you should compare yourself with is the person you were yesterday. And it's critical for the journey for personal growth and self-discovery, because you can look to other people to inspire you or to learn from them, to kind of deconstruct their methods of achieving high levels of success. But you really have to compare yourself with your own progress, because that's how you're going to be able to continue on the never-ending journey of growth, right? I'll end this idea with a quote I like a lot from Jim Rohn. He says, there are two ways to have the tallest building in town. One is to tear everyone else's building down, and the other is to build your building taller.
I love that. I sort of had the same experience, but I didn't consciously come into the same conclusion that you have. When you're alone by yourself, as solitude allows you to tune in and see yourself, you get to see your weaknesses, you get to see things that are average about you, things that are below average about you. And these things aren't actually easy. I believe we constantly distract ourselves because we don't want to be reminded of our unworthiness, as Ramdas would put it. So being in solitude for 2 days or 5 days, it forces you to see yourself as you are, right? You see every part of yourself. You see your strengths and your weaknesses. You see everything that's positive about you and everything that's negative about you. So you stop judging yourself. You just start seeing yourself as you are, and you stop comparing yourself with other people, because you're starting to become conscious of things that were subconscious before, because we all know subconsciously what's wrong with us, right? And what we need to do in life. But we live in such a snacking culture, like we mentioned, that we continuously distract ourselves from who we are.
That's such a great point, man. And something I've come to realize is that the journey of self-discovering is endless. There's so much depth to uncover within all of us. I talk a lot about discovering your infinite potential. And I say that because you're never going to be truly done in the process of uncovering who you are and who you could become, right? Your potential. So I think this experience is powerful because you have no choice but to go within, to go and identify your true self when you're in solitude and when you're in silence. So it's powerful. It's really powerful. So thanks for that. But yeah, those were kind of the two key things that I noticed from doing the silent retreat, right? The distraction, the mind, and how it naturally gets distracted, and how you really just stop comparing yourself to others. So yeah, I'm curious, what was your reason going into the silent retreat, and what were the high level benefits that you got from having this experience?
So my case was pretty similar to yours, actually. I heard other people trying silent retreats. I also knew it was challenging, so I really wanted to try it. But I kept putting it off until I realized I could do it at my own apartment. Right. And the first time I did it actually was a year before I tried it this past Christmas, and I didn't last even a day. I was constantly distracted. I had books with me that I opened and started reading. So going into it the second time, I knew what I was facing. So I made sure I don't have any excuses. And the reason I did it was there were three sets of questions that I really wanted to answer during my silence retreat. These questions came about by thinking about, where do people look for their identity in our culture, right? We look at the news, we look at other people, we look at movies, books, our family, our coworkers. We don't truly sit down and write down who we truly are, what are our values, what are our strengths, our weaknesses. And I wanted to give myself the time of the day to sit down and answer this question. And the second one was, most people don't think about the lifestyle they want. They live life and whatever happens kind of happens. That's majority of people in our culture. But it's really important to sit down and think about what kind of a lifestyle you truly want long term. And the last one was, who do people want to be associated with? We kind of have an idea, a vague idea in our minds, but most people, their friends or the people they interact with, they just walk in and out of their life. So these three things, the three questions of who I am, what are my values, what kind of a lifestyle I want in my life, and what kind of people I need to surround myself with to fit that lifestyle. These three questions, I wanted to focus on them for 2.5 days in solitude with no distractions. And no one really cares about your outcome as much as you do. So giving yourself the time of the day to sit down and write these things out, in my opinion, is really important. And the benefits I got out of it is that in the last 3-4 months, I have noticed that my habits have changed a little bit. I'm a lot more productive, and my sense of care for myself and for my life has also increased. And I attribute that to my silence retreat experience with these three questions.
Yeah, I love the focus you place behind those three questions, and I think they're powerful because on the point of the reticular activating system, I mean, it's really important to realize that at any given moment, there's trillions of variables and things going on around us, like at all times, that we don't even realize because the brain is very efficient. It only focuses on what's most important to it. However, how do we determine what's most important for the brain? Like, if you don't do that for yourself, the brain is just subconsciously going to decide what is most important to focus on in everything going on in the environment. So these questions, I think they're super critical, super important, because they create a filter through which you look at the world. They help you have a sense of focus that moves you closer in the direction of whatever destiny you want to create for your life. So at this point, we've discussed a little bit about like why we did it and at a high level what we got from it. From the silent retreat though, you know, we each got like very personal lessons and things that we took out of it. So I think it's valuable to share a few of them just so you guys can get an idea of what you could potentially learn from an experience like this. So starting off for me, when I came into the silent retreat, I had recently made a huge mistake. Like I had fucked up pretty bad. And it's powerful because when you discover that a part of yourself is fundamentally flawed, or that there's some part of you that needs fixing, per se, it kind of opens up a whole different universe into, hey, what else is wrong with me? Or like, what else is going on here? So when I was thinking about why I had made these mistakes, I realized that something that's very important to me as a person, a value that I have, is to be fearless, is to be courageous, right? And I want to be fearless because to be fearless is to live life to the fullest. I want to push into discomfort because that's really what helps me grow and expand as much as I possibly can. Now, the problem was when I made these mistakes, I thought I was being fearless when in fact I was actually being careless. And so that led me to think like, wait, what? Obviously, I want to be fearless, and like risk is going to be involved in a lot of things you do. Uncertainty and fear is going to be involved in many things that you do. But why was I careless in these situations? And what I realized is that the difference between the two extremes of carelessness and fearlessness comes from calculating the risk and the consequences that are involved in a certain decision. I realized that these mistakes that I made, I hadn't really thought about the consequences. I hadn't really thought about what could go bad or even consider the possibility of something wrong happening. And that's just being careless, right? Because the less risk you perceive there to be, the more risk you are actually taking on. That's actually a universal principle. It's a quote directly from Howard Marks, a billionaire investor. So he says it in the context of investing, but it actually goes much farther than that in our day-to-day lives. So now, when I make a decision that's important, I not only think about the potential upside, the benefits, but I also consider what the consequences are. Not only the immediate consequences, but also the second order consequences, the third order consequences, right? Like a decision has so many ripple effects. And our life is ultimately made out of an accumulation of all of our decisions, right? That's where we are today. It's because of the decisions we've made. So by improving the framework through which I make decisions, where I consider the consequences and the upside, now that I have the awareness of the risk that's at stake, I can now make a more proper decision. And if I feel fear, if I feel uncertain, and I've calculated the risk and I still think it's worth it, then that's when I'm truly being fearless, because I know that there's fear, but I'm acting in spite of it.
That's a really interesting lesson. One thing I really liked about what he said was seeing the secondary and tertiary consequences of your actions, because I think that's also what differentiates someone who's intelligent and someone who's not as intelligent. An intelligent person is like a chess player, right? The person who can see further into the future has a better chance at winning in life.
Another point I want to mention for something that really deeply impacted me during the silent retreat is on the topic of social media. What I realized is that during the silent retreat, I became aware of the fact that I spend more time on social media than I do on journaling, and sometimes even reading. So I asked myself, what does that say about myself? And I came to the conclusion that that implies that I care more about reacting to other people's lives than I do about taking the time to be proactive and creating my own destiny. And what I mean by that is, if you think about it, when you're on social media and you're just mindlessly scrolling away, what are you doing? You're just like seeing how other people live their life and reacting to it, judging them, comparing yourself to them. Like, it literally puts you in comparison mode. And that's super unhealthy because, especially with social media, people are putting like their best selves out there, even like false representations of how they actually live their life. And that's extremely toxic because if you see someone living their best life or you see someone has an amazing life and you compare it to your own, then you're just going to feel unhappy, unsatisfied with your own life. And the thing that's not obvious is that people aren't being their true self most of the time when they're on social media. Their true self is like they're fearful. They have challenges. They go through difficulties. They go through hardships, sadness, depression. They go through all of these things, but they post beautiful photos of their beautiful lives. And so since you feel the same way they do, but they're not expressing themselves in that same way, then you feel like you're stuck, like you're alone, like you're the only one that actually is in a negative state. But that's not true, right? So in this silent retreat, I kind of started to think, okay, what is even the purpose of social media? Why were these platforms created in the first place? Like, what is the use of this? And of course, it's to increase our connection with each other. But if we're comparing ourselves and just like reacting to each other's lives, are we really connecting with each other? How practical, how purposeful is that to our life? So the conclusion I came to for myself is that instead of mindlessly scrolling through my phone, why don't I use social media for its true purpose and connect more with people? And for example, one way that I do this is, as I mentioned, the mind will naturally want to get distracted. You're naturally going to need and want to take breaks. So when you do that, why not use relationships as a way to take a break, as a way to get distracted, right? It's a very healthy way to get distracted. I think it's very important to mention that social media is a tool. It's not inherently good or bad. What makes it good or bad is how you use it. And the problem with our phone, the problem with social media is that we often become subconsciously addicted to it to the point where it begins to use us instead of us using them.
I really like what you mentioned, especially about how we enhance our photos and we show our best self to the world. And it is a comparison game. And we want to show our best self to the world. And that's not a bad thing. It becomes bad when we start believing in that ourselves to the point where we become fearful towards our weaknesses, towards our true self, basically, right? Because we go through a lot of stuff, a lot of challenges personally. We have stuff that are not really good about us that we're not going to show to the world. But after a while, we become addicted to doing that and we start believing in those lies. But the silence retreat here helped you and helped me to sit down and really see who we truly are. So yeah, I really like that insight that you shared.
Yeah, I completely agree, man. And to close off the point on social media, I think it's extremely important for us to be vulnerable because that's part of being human. It's in our nature to be imperfect. And in a platform where people are posting their best selves and not really being vulnerable, it minimizes the opportunity for connection with each other. So to move into the final lesson that I took from the silent retreat, from everything that I journaled about, everything that I thought about, and all of the self-centered focus I had in reflecting upon my life and creating the vision and future that I wanted for myself, I came to realize that if you think you know who you are, you have only scratched the surface of an infinite depth. Because you may think you know a lot about yourself, but relative to everything there is to know about yourself, you know almost nothing about who you truly are. Now, this goes back to the point I was talking about, the journey of self-discovery being endless. You're always going to be discovering and uncovering a part about yourself, and that's something we should continue to strive for. I don't think it's practical to live with the illusion that you think you know who you are, because then you have less to actually learn. And besides, believing that you know almost nothing about yourself is what will actually encourage you to be more self-analytical, to be more aware of everything you say, of everything you do, of everything you believe, of the way you behave, of all of your habits, right? There's so many different components that make up our life that we aren't even aware of. What would happen if we took the time to question ourselves? So to finish off here, I'll leave you with a quote that I think is very powerful. And this is by Lao Tse. He says, "Knowing others is intelligence. Knowing yourself is true wisdom. Mastering others is strength, but mastering yourself is true power."
It reminds me of the quote by Plato that says, "An unexamined life is not worth living." And it relates to what he just said, right? Examining yourself is examining life, because you're a reflection of your life. And that's exactly what we did, right? We sat down in silence for a few days and we faced reality, which is very challenging.
Yeah, man, it's truly an incredible experience, and it's crazy how much we learn from it. Cool. So as a final segment here, you know, we've shared a lot of knowledge, a lot of insights and whatnot, but I think the most practical thing, the most useful thing, is to leave you with some actionable takeaways. So if you want to learn more about the topic of solitude and minimizing distractions, I highly recommend the books Deep Work by Cal Newport and Indistractable by Nir Eyal. If you want some tools that can help you minimize distractions, I highly recommend the app Forest on both iOS and Android. And then there's two other cool ones, Moment for iOS and Stay Focused for Android. These have helped me minimize distractions a ton and have bought me so much time, so much invaluable time. The other tip I'll give to minimize distractions is to put your phone out of reach, right? When I was talking about how subconscious it is for us to use our phones, a lot of that has to do with how easy it is to use them. So one simple thing is to just put your phone out of reach, because it requires more effort. The more effort it requires to do something, the more conscious energy it will require, and the less likely you are to do it. The final tip I'll give for minimizing distractions is to move whatever addicting apps you have to the last page of your screen, or put it into a folder, or just remove the app entirely from your home screen. Or if you really want to transcend, just delete the app. For choosing a better distraction, I mentioned a lot about how the mind wants to get distracted or take a break. My approach to this is, like, if you're going to get distracted or take a break, like, move your body first. The body and the mind are interconnected. Many times when you're tired, the brain is just like depleted. If you move your body, it's going to re-energize your mind, and that'll help you a lot in staying focused. I set a rule for myself that I think is very powerful. That's basically, anytime I'm using social media, I have to be standing up. That way it forces me to limit the time that I use it, because I don't want to be standing forever. And again, when you get distracted, prioritize relationships. If you're going to go ahead and waste time on your phone, don't waste your time, invest it. And you do that by prioritizing relationships and investing in your connections. The final thing I want to mention is the importance of journaling. When I come to think about it, the times that I've grown the most in my life have been when I've reflected, sat down, and actually written either in a journal or on my computer about very difficult and tough and important questions. So I encourage you to take the time. It's not a natural or easy habit to maintain, but I promise you it will add a tremendous amount of value to your life. So with that, I want to give you a few questions to journal on that could potentially uncover a lot of things about yourself. So here's a few questions for you. What are the most important values in your life, and what rules do you have to meet those values? If everything in your life was exactly the way you wanted it to be, an ideal life per se, what would that look like? What are your lifetime goals, your greatest aspirations, and why are those things important to you? Right? I think a common theme here is, like, always asking why. Why is the key to achieve depth, profound depth? So question yourself and question the why behind the why. Moving on, what is your purpose in life? What makes you feel fulfilled and fully alive? What is an area of your life you're not happy with, and why not? What is an area of your life that you're really happy with, and why? What will your life look like in 10 years? What has gone wrong when I have failed to achieve what I dreamed? And what makes you happy? Cool. Those are some questions. If you want more, reach out to me. I've got millions.
And I can attest to that. He has forwarded so many questions that he has researched over the years, and they're really powerful questions. And something else I wanted to add to these points is you don't have to go to a silence retreat. I know some of them are over $1,000. You could literally do this at your own apartment, like I did, right? I locked myself in a restroom. And if you are going to do this, which I highly recommend, make sure you don't take anything in with you. For example, turn off all your electronics. Don't take any books with you. I even removed any shampoo bottles that I didn't need because I knew my mind's going to try to distract me by reading the shampoo bottles, as weird as that sounds. So make sure you're completely free of distractions. Even take a pillow with you, a notebook, and a set of questions. So for example, the three questions that I mentioned, those really helped me understand myself and my life and where I'm going in life. What kind of person I am, what kind of lifestyle I want, and what type of people fit that lifestyle. Another thing that I did to understand myself, and this is from a book called Self-Compassion by Christine Knopf, I spent some time writing down things that are average about me and also below average about me. And this serves to increase your level of self-compassion because you come to peace with who you truly are and remind yourself of all the negative things and also all the positive things about yourself. And lastly, if you're the type of person who likes to challenge themselves, like running marathons or climbing mountains or whatever it is, consider this a challenge. I would say this was really hard for me to do. It was really challenging to sit down and just face reality and see who you truly are and what you truly want in life. And the person you are when you come out of this will not be the same person before you did this. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, and that's the goal. We're constantly evolving and changing and becoming even more. And that growth and evolution is expedited depending on how many uncomfortable situations you put yourself in. Awesome. So to end, if you found any value, we would love for you to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And yeah, this is a new podcast, so please send us any critical feedback so we can get better. So with that, thanks for tuning in. And as always, stay infinite, my friends.